Blog Talk Radio.
A closer look with Kay Compton and Gus Enneberg back together again.
And yes, we are back together again. I am Kay Compton, and you are. How's that? How about that open, Gus? I'm telling you, Ty Washington is really on the ball. Ty Washington, president and founder of Black Wax Records, BW Moving Images, and we are here in Jersey City at the BW Moving Images studio. And wow, I mean, people really have to see this brand new setup, don't you think?
We should charge admission to get in here.
I don't know about that. I don't know how Ty would go for that. But anyway, you know, we are here and we have a really exciting show for tonight. And a number of things, but even before we do that, what I want to tell you, though, I'm going to tell you who's on chat for tonight. We're going to be talking to a young lady who is a self-published author and writer. Her name is Sandra Denise Roberts, so we're going to be getting to Sandra in a very short period of time. And then we're also going to be talking to the co-founder and president and CEO of BW Moving Images, Tylon Washington, is coming up. And he's going to tell us all about what's going on with BW Moving Images right here in Jersey City. They do so many, many, many things. You're going to find out all about them. And lastly, the last guest is Amrine Henningberg, and she is with the CDC out of Atlanta and the world, the Center for Disease Control. And she is a health advisor, and we're going to find out exactly what her title is when your daughter comes on. Is that okay, Gus?
Be sure to tell them she's my daughter. That's what's important
I
here.
Certainly will.
Never mind her saving the world. She's my daughter.
And we're going to say that. Sandra Denise Roberts is Sam Roberts' daughter, who is what, an assemblyman, councilman?
New York State Assemblyman.
I thought I was going to say president.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Okay. Hello, everyone, once again. You know one thing? There's some really awful things in the news lately. You know, this is a story about the cop shooting a 13-year-old over a BB gun. Where is this? This takes place in Chicago. A 13-year-old boy was shot and wounded yesterday by the Chicago police officers who said he was holding a BB gun. Jimmy Cannon was taken to Stroger Hospital and is listed in critical condition. Get this, everyone. He was shot 8 times in the shoulders, hand, and leg. And this kid had a BB gun. What's going on? We're going to try to find out more about that story. And there's another story that I was looking at, too, because this one, they were showing graphic images. I don't really even want to see this. San Francisco police gunned down a man skipping bus fare. Now, there has to be more to this story. It says here that San Francisco police shot and killed a 19-year-old man after he fired upon them during a foot chase Saturday. The deceased, a Washington State parolee wanted for questioning in the slaying of a pregnant woman in Seattle last week, was shot while fleeing from police trying to cite him for evading bus fare. What is going on with all this kind of, you know, unnecessary violence, shooting, killing, and so forth and so on? What days are we back to, Gus?
Well, that's a world, Kay, in which we now live.
Mm.
And we can react in two ways. We can act like it's terrible stuff, and we're not going to tolerate it. Mm-hmm. That won't get us anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So what's the answer? What do you do about it?
We train our young people, particularly, what this world is like,
mm-hmm,
and how they have got to operate. They don't want to get themselves shot over nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I was also listening to NPR, and that's National Public Radio. You know, yes, I'm going to say it because they're a pretty good outfit. And they were talking about, you know, kids who are in shelters and kids who they really don't even have a life anymore if they are in a shelter or if they've been homeless, and people are trying to keep them in school and it's impossible. A lot of them won't even go to school, can't go to school, or are afraid to go to school. There's so many things that are happening that's negative that we really going to get into. We're going to get into that more with when Ty comes on, because he is also involved with his BW Moving Images, because they do a lot in the community with all these kind of programs, but not all, well, a whole lot of programs that are keeping us involved and informed about what's going on and what to do about it. But right now, I want to talk to this brand new author and writer, Sandra Denise Roberts. Sandra, You're a new author and a new writer, right?
Well, yes, I actually self-published my book in 2007.
Now, that's the interesting part. That's our speakeasy segment. You see, Lisa Payne developed this and created this new segment called Speakeasy, where we talk to self-published authors. And that's not easy. How do you do that?
It's not. It's very challenging. I can say when I first launched the company, you know, you're a one-woman show, so you really have to stay focused and set out a plan and invest time in yourself because it's just you. So, you know, I did a lot of research. I feel like there's more research
to be done
out there now. Mm-hmm. There's more resources for people who want to self-publish today than even, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Social media has grown tremendously in these 5 years. You have ebooks, you know, there's articles on the internet. eHow will give you 15 steps on how
step
to self-publish.
By step.
I didn't have that.
No kidding. So you have to find out it all by yourself.
No, I talked to some people who had self-published before, and it was a hodgepodge of information, so I put it all together.
Was it a long, drawn-out process? How long did it take you from the finished product to where the book actually came
out? No, it wasn't long at all. That's actually how I ended up self-publishing, because I said it took me so long to write the novel.
Mm-hmm.
If I go the traditional route, it could take another year, 2 years, 3 years, depending on, you know, what other titles they had out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you self-publish, you have more control.
Tell us about the process, your thought process, because I suspect when you first said, I'm going to write a book, did you say I'm going to self-publish it?
No, I didn't.
Okay, tell me how we got from normal to I'm going to self-publish.
Well, So when I was halfway done writing the book, I went to a literary agent and they told me that I had a good story. So to go ahead with it, a few things I needed to change. They compared me to Terry McMillan. So I was amped up. I'm like, yes, I'm ready to go. So I went ahead and finished it. It still took me a long time to finish. So, and I wanted to have my book out. I wanted to be in Harlem Book Fair like that summer. So I knew that if I had gone the traditional route, it would have taken some time. So I said, you know what? Let me try this on my own. Worst case, I can sell some books and then I could still try to go the traditional route. They could buy me out and I could have my own business. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to have my own. So.
But when you started out, first, I'm going to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to the practical considerations. Once I write this, whatever it comes out to be, how do I get it out so the world sees it? Now, it was in that process that you decided I'm going to publish this thing myself, whether the world is ready or not.
Yes, because I was like, you know, I know enough people. Word of mouth, it'll get out.
You work for Puffy.
I was like, it will get out. Of course, it's not. It hasn't gotten to as many people as it would have had I gone the traditional route. But that's just your first book. And I did some homework and a lot of people's first books went that way. Even, you know, singers come out with an album and when they come out with their second one, they're like, wow, I didn't know we had an album before.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't let it deter me.
Now you have some motivation behind you. I mean, some big guns here. What's his name?
Ooh, Mr. Combs?
Yeah, Mr. Combs.
Well, I did work for Puffy for like a year and a half, but I had already started writing the book when I went to go work for him.
Mm-hmm.
But still, just being in that atmosphere really charged me.
Yeah.
Let me know I can do anything.
Yeah. That had to be. And having met Puffy some years ago through my daughter, Lisa, that had to be a very creative, very moving. Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, never stopping. You're just moving.
Always.
Into the creative
always on the go. And he, you know, he had multiple businesses.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't an issue of, oh, I can't write and launch the company.
Yeah. Also, you know, Gus, I'm going to have to say this too. Sandra, also, the name of you founded your own publishing company.
I did.
What's the name of it?
Angela's Daughter Publishing. I named it after my mother who passed away in 1992 of cancer. So it's my homage to her. I have my father living, so, you know, everyone always speaks of his name. So I said, you know what? We're going to make this for Angela.
So what's the name of the company?
Angela's Daughter.
Angela's Daughter Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to take a short break right now.
Right.
Okay. We're Kate Thompson and Gus Henningberg, and we are here in BW Moving Images Studio. Listen to that music. John Washington is on the ball, isn't it, Gus?
And he's got good taste in
music. I know, yeah. And good taste in hosts, too. And we have good taste in guests, too. We'll be right back. Stay with us, everyone.
There's far too many of you that you know we have to find to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can complicate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and kiss here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Sandra Denise Roberts is an author and writer, a new author and a new writer. And the name of her book is, Sandra?
If Your Heart Isn't In It.
We're going to ask you about it very, very shortly. But you were talking about the name of your publishing company, that you are the founder of that publishing company. Now, what is your goal regarding the publishing company? In other words, I have several books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for a publishing company because I'm too lazy to do it on my own. So I want to go to a publishing company that has self-published, and then I'll say I'm self-published.
Right.
So
the ultimate goal, well, when I started, of course, it was to put out my titles, but I would also like to be able to publish others.
Ah.
However, I'm not in position to do that
now
at this moment,
mm-hmm.
but I still can provide services to them. But seeing that I'm newly with my master's from NYU in PR, I am looking to provide book publicity
uh-huh.
for writers, because, you know, if you have the basic tools, you can then do what I did. I wrote my own press releases and reached out to the media and wrote my own bio and knew how to plan events and sign myself up for, you know, for book fairs and stuff like that. So that self-published person.
Wow, that's 3/4 of it, isn't it?
Could.
Or no, the writing, of course, is everything.
Right.
But I mean,
the marketing.
That marketing, the advertising.
Exactly.
Right, the promoting.
So that's something
sure.
that I can provide for someone right now. And I have the relationships with, you know, if someone needs an editor or if someone needs their, you know, their book design, you know, the text layout, all of that. I do have those relationships. I just don't have the funding to for someone to come and say, hey, here's my manuscript and I need to have the world know about me.
You know, I'm going to give out our number right now, if I can see where it is, and let people call in if they want to talk to you. The number to talk to Sandra Denise Roberts about self-publishing and about being an author and a writer and how to get in touch with her. The number right here in the studio here on the Kay and Gus Show is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. So if you want to call in, feel free to do that. And Sandra, in case people want to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
I have a website. It's www.sandradeniseroberts.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you spell Sandra, S-O-N-D-R-A, Denise, D-E-N-I-S-E, Roberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S.com. And on there, there's a way to contact us, and that would actually send a message.
So that's Sandra Denise Roberts, and Sandra is spelled with an O. So S-O-N-D-R-A for Sandra, and then Denise, D-E-N-I-S-E, Roberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S.com.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, Sandra, I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect most people, most writers, potential writers, make a lot of decisions along the way when they're starting off before deciding how to get it published. Now, you obviously decided somewhere in that process, I'm going to publish this thing myself. I'm just curious. Why?
So that I could have control. Honestly.
Like that.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
I knew exactly how I wanted the book cover to look, the font, all of that.
Do you have any regrets?
No. I've learned, so I have knowledge that I can take to the second book and to help others. So I had a learning curve, whereas now I can get on the phone with someone and just give them some tips.
Yeah.
That probably took me a good 6 months to figure out.
I suspect there are some people, readers, other writers, who would consider it the height of arrogance for somebody to decide, one, I'm going to get a book written. Two, I'm going to do it myself.
Not so.
Did you get any of that feedback like that at all?
No, actually.
So you had no doubts?
No, I had no doubts. And I remember I was at a...
That's confidence.
Something wrong with her.
No, because even the Harlem Book Fair, it was amazing. The Harlem Book Fair, being a new writer, I was expecting to be, on a path where no one comes, where there's not much foot traffic. And they had me in the same row as, Triple Crown and, Relentless Aaron,
wow,
Omar Tyree. So I was like, all right, God, here we are.
Yeah.
And that's, I have favor.
Now, what's the name of the book, by the way?
The book is If Your Heart Isn't In It.
And what is it about?
It's about a woman named Angela Ray Arnold, and she falls in and out of love, but she loses love for herself.
Is this biographical, autobiographical?
Inspiration came from a situation that I was in. But then once I began writing, I used my imagination and experiences from other people, went off on tangents and added stuff, took stuff out.
Is it a good story?
It is.
It's a fascinating story?
It's entertaining.
I haven't read it yet. And I was just telling you before, I saw it started before, that I'm known to always read the book. But we didn't have time for me to get it. I'm going to read.
Okay.
I will read within the next couple of days, and then we're going to have you back.
Okay.
And
now,
then I want to talk
Sandra,
about these.
She's hustling you for a book. let's be clear about what's going on here.
It's okay. I heard it was on 125th Street, and they didn't buy it from me either. So
okay.
It's okay.
Oh, God. But the name of, how much is the book?
For you? It's so been out there for a while now.
Period.
It's originally $14.95, but that was when I first published it.
Uh-huh.
So
it's, what is the going price for it now? It's $14.95.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Let's see.
And where can we get the book?
BarnesandNoble.com. Amazon. It's if someone just Googled or searched the name or the name of the book, it'll show you where you can get it.
Uh-huh. Your heart, if your heart's not in it.
If your heart isn't in it.
Mm-hmm. The name itself is I'm dying to ask you a whole lot of stuff here.
Whose heart was
it in that? Yeah. You know, I want to really get into this. Whose heart was it in what and why?
And actually, if someone gets the book from my website, I fulfill those orders, so I sign those.
Ah, okay. So they would have a book signing, a book signed by the author itself. Okay.
See, that's the advantage of being self-published.
I know.
You can connect with your
readers. You write
it. Yeah.
You write it, then you get it printed,
mm-hmm.
and then you market it,
mm-hmm.
and all the money comes to you.
Yeah.
Never mind a publisher.
Yeah. Well, you know, she said that she wanted control, so she has total control.
She's got
that's
it.
The way to do
but
it.
But you have to front the money.
Yeah.
So you, you know,
yeah.
You
there's money that you have to
put.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you,
how many did you have? Just we're going to have to take a break. But listen, how many did you have to have initially?
It depends. If you, the more you get, the less each book is.
Okay.
So,
Sandra, thank you very much for
You're
coming.
Welcome.
I'm going to come back again because we have
I
some
am.
Unfinished business
yes.
now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sandra Denise Roberts, everyone.
Wait a minute. You did not ask her for an autographed copy of her book.
May I have an autograph?
That's already in the works.
See how it has happened?
It's already in the works.
Sandra, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You know, come back again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. Listen, we wanted to let everybody, before you go, we want to let everyone know who's coming up next. And that is going to be Ty Washington from BW Moving Images, our publication company right here that we use all the time. And we want to thank them right now. As a matter of fact, that Ty is with Shauna Glover and Nyana Jones and Lisa Payne. And he's the founder. And we're going to find out all about that. We have been using Ty for years and years. We go back many years. And BW Moving Images, they're on their own website. You're going to find out everything there is to know. As a matter of fact, I think I can safely announce that Ty is going to be moderating Donald Payne's Congressional Black Caucus this year. You know? Yeah, can we take this call? Because we have you're on the air. Hello? You're on the air. You're on.
Hi. Did I miss the author?
No, she's
still here. I actually had a question.
Okay. She's still here.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. I'm an aspiring writer myself, and I've often thought about going the route of self-publishing. And I know that you're offering advice to new writers, but if there's one piece of advice that you could give someone who actually is interested in self-publishing, what would that be?
As far as what part of it, there's so
as
much.
As far as, well, okay, so two specific parts. In terms of actually finishing, you know, a book, particularly a novel, and then also what are some of the first things that they should do or consider if they are considering self-publishing?
I would say have a plan before you even finish, you know, and as far as finishing it, I don't know where you are in the process of finishing it, but you definitely have, you know, that you have to get it edited and you may have to rewrite it two or three times depending on how much you edited along the way. But I think that's important. A lot of these books out here that when people do self-publish, you know, I've seen tons of typos and, you know, just grammatically incorrect. So I would say invest in getting it written correctly. And then there's the business part of marketing it. And honestly, marketing it is probably 2/3 of the entire success. Mm. Like writing it is as hard as writing it is the easy part.
How long did it take you to write the book?
It took me 3 years, but you know, I worked and, you know, have life and everything going on and life going on. So I think that's what made it take so long for me. But yeah, I would definitely say, you know, keep at it and definitely just have a plan and know, you know who your market is. That's important. Map it out where you want to be, how many books you want to sell. Just have a vision and then try to make it happen.
Okay. And we want to let people know where to get in touch with you again. What is the name of your website again?
My website is SandraDeniseRoberts.com. And if you can't find that, if you just put in Sandra Roberts and writer, or if you put in if your heart isn't in it, you know, and search me, I'm there. I'm also on Twitter at Sandra Denise, SandraDenise. So you can find me there as well.
And also, we can tell people that once they go to Blog Talk Radio and they type in the K and Gus Show, K is spelled K-A-E, and A-N-D, and then Gus, G-U-S, show, they will be able to hear the show again and again because that's always going to be up on our
right.
site.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, you will have that also.
So what's your name?
Hello, Cole.
Oh, she left?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we are getting ready to go for a break right now, and we will be right back. Sandra, thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome. Thanks
really.
For having me.
Thank you for coming.
I'll be back.
Yeah, okay. That's the promise now, okay?
Yes, it is.
All right, we'll be right back with everyone. Please stay with us. Back, Kate Thompson here with hello,
Gus Shanningberg.
How are you?
I am fine, thank you.
Good, I know you are. Now, listen, that was a real fantastic interview with Sandra Denise Roberts. Is that something?
That's an exciting experience.
Yeah, you know, when you self publish your own book, that's a job, that's a lot of research, that's a lot of time. I mean, you really have to be dedicated to one your own work to go, you know, to be put out there. So we're going to be talking to Sandra again right now. However, boy, I'm telling you, head honcho himself. If not for him, the studio would not be located here in Jersey City. Ty Washington, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm just so excited to be here in the presence of real, true living legends in multimedia and television.
Man. Let us continue. Let us continue. Go ahead.
I remember many years, but not that many years ago, listening to Kay Thompson on WLIB Radio in New York City, part of the Inner City Broadcasting Network, and watching Gus Henningberg on television.
Positively Black. Yeah.
And now to have them, and I'm in the presence of such greatness, I don't feel worthy.
Keep going.
Somehow I don't feel worthy.
I want to know, how is it that you are operating this whole thing? And then Shauna Glover's in there, Ayanna's in there, Tati is around here someplace. How is that happening? And you're in here to us.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
I'm in here promoting himself.
And promoting himself, right.
Well, I'm going to say this, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Had it not been for you guys paving the way for me, this would not even exist. I think, you guys were real trailblazers in media, which actually inspired me. I was inspired listening to you on the radio. And so many others, it just compelled me to believe in myself enough to know that all of this is possible. So I think you have to be inspired first before you do anything. I think you are your thoughts, and it requires some form of inspiration, some spark. And the spark was laid down with guys like Gus Henningberg on Pos Black at some of the toughest times to be Black.
Yeah.
And, you know, on mainstream media.
Absolutely.
And Kay Thompson to be a female at, inner city broadcasting. I think one of the, real trailblazers. So I got to honestly say that you guys were a true inspiration.
Well, but we have to say,
we
want people to know, too, that, that's been some time since we've both been on the air. And we've both been on the air. Gus has been on the air over 20 years, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and I've been on air over 20 years also.
Wow.
So between the two of us, we have over many years of experience
absolutely.
In this business. But I have to say this time, now I've known you a long time. I think ever since about a year or two after I started on WLIB.
That's right.
And you started calling.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a young music company at the time.
That's right. It was Four Men Productions. Yeah. It wasn't even Black Wax.
It was what production?
Four Men Productions.
But anyway, if you remember, I created the magazine type format.
That's right.
And I had this section. I had the police report. I had the children's forum. I had the free forum thing. And I needed music.
That's right.
For the different segments. And you created and produced music and sent me this information.
Music,
And
you played it.
Of course, I used it. Yeah. You kidding?
And that was the kind of access that was so special during that time. You know, it was a real sense of community via the radio. And the radio was like a meeting place.
Yeah.
It was like a town hall meeting you can have in your car, at home, cleaning up, and you can just call a person and really reach someone. And that was so special about that time in radio, that you could do whatever you needed to do and still listen and participate and engage in a conversation.
And it was also fun.
Oh,
it was also fun because Ty would be listening in.
Mm-hmm.
My son Eric would come in and whisper to my ear, into my ear, saying, "Mommy, can I have $20? I'm on the air." And I gave him the pocketbook. Gina is doing something on the air with relationships. Lisa came on with Terry, and she met Paris, who's the head of Black Relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And then who else? Let me see. Oh, and Christy. Christy does all the legal work. You've met Christy, and
that's
now
right,
you're doing
that's
the documentary for her husband.
Listening to you.
We go back.
And on the radio and watching Gus on television, I decided to take in my major at Medgar Evers radio communication.
No kidding, really.
With Dr. Umalu.
Uh huh.
Professor Dr. Umalu.
Uh-huh.
So I heard she's passed away.
Yeah, I remember the name.
Yeah, that
Sonny Sutherland was there.
That's how I met Sonny.
Yeah, Sonny.
Who we had on the show last week.
Yeah,
I met Sonny at Medgar Evers College.
Wow.
He's my instructor at the radio station. Listening to you guys on the radio and watching, I said, I want to do this. You know, it's just so exciting.
And I was saying, I want to be a musician. I want to sing.
Yeah.
I think I told you one time I want to sing, but don't
and,
sing.
And every now and then the Lord intervenes.
That's cold. That is really cold. Anne Renee, I hope you're listening to your father.
But
anyway.
It was really, you guys were really honestly a real inspiration to me, and so many others.
But were you, if not for the people listening in. Mm-hmm. You know, I was trying to provide information that we needed, that they needed to hear. And I have to say that during that time, you know, remember the Toronto Broadway case,
broke
my show. I want to try to get Al Sharpton here, and I'm going to talk about these people if they don't come on.
That's right.
I'm telling you right now, if they don't come on, either by phone or here on, you know, Blog Talk Radio, when I met them a long time ago, I am going to not only talk about them, but tell on them.
That's right. That's right.
And I know things.
Mm-hmm. But you know what's so remarkable, though, yeah. Kay, too, is that you guys maintain the ability to stay relevant because you guys are now on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's
thanks to you.
Worldwide.
Thank you.
And, you know, a lot of folks have come and gone and so forth. You guys are still here and still making it.
But if not for you, because, you know, when, you know, I was between things, you know, as executive producer for the Newark Public School System television programming, and then wanted to do something back on the air. And Wayne said, well, come on, go up to New Rochelle. Conroy is up there and we'll fill in for his show. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I walked into the studio, it was like getting back into the zone. You knew you were home.
Yeah.
You know, and that whole feeling again. So who did we see? Who did I talk to? Gus, remember? Ty.
Mm-hmm.
And because of him, because of you, we are back on because of you.
Yeah.
So, you know, really thank you. What's Black Wax all about? Okay. Tell people.
Black Wax is a multimedia company. We're focusing on film lately. A couple of documentaries. One you mentioned, The Strong Will.
Yeah.
The story of Wilfredo Benitez. We have a trailer up on BW Moving Images. That's BWMOVING.
Oh, really?
A trailer on Fred Ho. It's called Diary of the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is our next feature film. And we're also working on a horror film, which is very interesting, called Apartment 6E.
Uh-huh.
And so we start production in October of this year, the month of Halloween, to do a horror. We actually go into production. And Shauna just adds it up. But BW Moving Images is a New York-based film and television production company committed to technical and creative excellence. With over 30 years experience in the industry, we have a broad understanding of the unique and ever-shifting multimedia landscape. We want you to explore and see why BW Moving Images should be the production team you choose for your next project, whether it's a film project, a commercial, a radio show. We have a radio network now here, and we have four shows starting in September.
Wow.
Sunny Sutherland is going to come on and do a show through our network. Shahid Stover, who has an excellent book on hip-hop, and it's called Intellectual Resistance. And we also have a few other shows, but we're going to keep folks posted on what's happening.
Absolutely.
On our
great
website.
That is so great. And we're so satisfied. If not for you, as I said, if not for you, you know, we would not be back on the air, really.
There's
a lot
really
of good things going on.
And
I have to say, too, there's a documentary, not a documentary, but an interview that Gus, that you did with Larry Golden, who is the CEO of the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. And Gus and Larry have this one-on-one personal conversation. And Larry tells how Gus was involved with the building, the construction of New Jersey Performing Arts Center. And he tells, and then Gus also talks about Larry's importance to it. That's downtown Newark. So we're going to be talking about these places close to us that we know, and we know a lot of stories about. And really, if not for you, as I was saying before, we wouldn't be here.
And it's that rich history.
Yeah.
I think it's one thing to be able to see a magnificent building like the New Jersey Palace,
Performing
Arts Center. You go there and you see it in all its splendor, and you see the wonderful guests, but you don't know the work that
or who was involved in it, right?
Yeah, it has a rich history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just sitting, listening to Gus and Larry have this really intimate and touching at one point conversation. You can see the respect Larry has for Gus, and Gus has for Larry in this conversation. And we're going to have that up on YouTube real soon.
Yeah. Well, Ty, I know you have to go back into production area right there in the engineering room. But listen, then you have to come back. I think that we should devote a time to BW Moving Images each show so we can get an update on what you're doing. Because like with the interviews that Gus and I have done, you know, with so many people, I'm talking about the video, the television, you know, we want to, you know, get that up and running also. Let's go to the next call. We have a caller here, 323-679-0906. If you want to talk to Gus Annenberg, Kate Thompson, and Ty Washington, 323-679-0906. You're on the air. Hello. You're on.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
You're waiting. Yeah. Okay.
CPA has to be up.
All right. The person is, are you there, caller?
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear the call.
Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I actually had a question for Mr. Washington. I understand you run a multimedia company. Now, you're working on a horror film, I heard, but do you also help other people who may have film projects or, you know,
yeah.
Like what other kinds of things does the company do?
Absolutely. We actually want to encourage folks who are listening to this program, if you are involved in a film or multimedia advertisement that you need to produce for a network, whether it's public access or mainstream media or a short or a music video, you know, to give us a call. And, you know, we have our own equipment here.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own tools. We definitely
mm-hmm.
believe in having your own so you can be totally independent. You don't have to go to anyone and ask anybody for anything.
This is a one-stop shop. You do all
aspects
of it.
Absolutely.
Everything.
We have some of the latest equipment, mm-hmm. Latest programs, photo. We just have CS3 just installed on all of our computers. That's an After Effects program that you see when you see these wonderful special effects.
Wow.
And
no kidding.
So forth and so
really?
On.
How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah.
You could just go to our website. It's called BW Moving Images, BW-MOVINGIMAGES images.com.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Ty, before you go, one thing also I like is, now, is there a number, a phone number that people can get in touch with?
Oh, absolutely. That's 212-696-8562.
Give that number again.
212-696-8562.
All right, so just in case people want to get in touch with BW Moving Images for your film, for your project,
mm-hmm.
either it's for school or for, you know, commercial consumption.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, really, this is the place
to
go.
No job too big
satisfied.
Or too small.
Yeah, I understand you're going to be in Washington soon. Going
to
be moderating.
Yes, I was excited
for the Congressional
to get a
call. Black Caucus. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's really heavy. So
yeah.
I'm really excited about that.
Taking my place, eh?
Those shoes are too big. The guys are a tough act
to
follow.
I'm so glad you could do it.
Doesn't mean I won't try. But you guys are a tough act to follow.
But anyway, Ty,
mm-hmm.
thanks so much. You know, and you know what
else I
like about Ty, too?
Mm-hmm.
What he does and what we do is we involve our family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's important.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
you have your daughters working, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, your
that's
friends
right.
working here. And Gus has his
they really
coming
run the
up.
Company.
The air name's coming up.
And that's so important. I mean, that's where it starts.
Yeah,
with family.
Yeah. My kids are involved
right.
and so forth and so on. So,
that's
okay.
the right way to do things. I think, right?
I think so too. Anyway, we're taking a break and we're coming right back, everyone. I'm Kate Thompson with Gus Henningberg, Ty Washington, and Gus's daughter, Amrenae Henningberg, is here. We're going to be talking to her about what she does. Really interesting stuff. Stay with us, everyone. We will be right back.
Okay.
My hollow bones that rocks my soul. Looking back over my past dreams that I once knew, wondering why my dreams never came true. Is it because I'm black? Somebody tell me, what can I do? Oh, Lord. Oh, something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Yeah. And this world of no pity, I was raised in the ghetto.
'cause I'm black.
Ago, a dragon was born. Disguised as a man, he could take many shapes. Baritone saxophonist, author, composer, and part-time farmer, the dragon is Fred Ho. And this is his story, a film by Talon Xavier Washington. Diary of the Dragons, the Revolution of Fred Ho. Through word and thought, song and deed, he sought to change the world. His efforts earned him deadly enemies, but he refused to conform. He resisted control. One day, the dragon learned he had been poisoned by his enemies. They believed him to be weak. They were wrong.
I'm done with the music business. It's about getting through all kinds of gatekeepers to basically enforce mediocrity and to crush independent spirit. I want to see all the fun. Well, let's make a distinction. Making music and the music industry are two different things. I still love and I'm very passionate about music. I think I make the best music I've ever made in my entire life. And I'm going to continue in that direction. I've not yet been able to be the answer. I see whatever time I have on this planet as the next period being my better period. Now, mediocrity, people say, well, what about so-and-so? Aren't they great players? Yes, they're great players, but so what? The mediocrity becomes the fact that they're avoiding dealing with the macro and typical. Meaning that is their music, is it a force to change humanity, to change the world? Your ass so you can learn how to kick mine, make me also make a program to retirement.
Diary of the Dragon, Revolution of Fred Ho, coming to a theater near you.
And we're back on Kay Thompson with Gus Henningberg. And that was Diary of the Dragon. That was a trailer for it, of the story of Fred Ho. Wow, that's powerful. Wow, and that's a sneak look at the sneak peek trailer. And Bob Martin did do the voiceover. Bob Martin, mm-hmm. former producer for Positively Black. Bob was here with us last week and met Ty and did it. Wow, powerful. Has he heard this yet, Ty? Yes, he's heard it. Wow, that's really powerful. And when is it coming in? I want to find out when we're going to be able to see it. It's really exciting. And did you do the music or what? The music is by Fred Ho. Wow, that's really powerful. I can't wait to see that. Really. Right now, however, now we're going into the next segment of the program. We're going to be talking to, and she is right here, Anne Renee Henningberg. Anne Renee is Gus's daughter, and she is the public health advisor for the Center for Disease Control. I have to say that she travels all over. You rarely see her, huh?
Rarely is a good word.
And where is she when she talks to you?
I have to ask.
every time I call her or she calls me, my first question is, where are you? And there are occasions where the answer is, well, I'm in an airport. And I say, what airport? I don't know, Daddy. Let me check and see. Because she is constantly on the move all over the world.
All right. Well, you know, let's take it from there. You can be all over the world, right, at any one time. How many countries have you gone to?
Oh, I stopped counting. At least 25.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, because I got into this job, my global part of my career has been in global immunization.
Mm.
And generally, the places that we work are places where the health system doesn't work very well. So you have diseases that are gone in the developed parts of the world that you still find in places where the health system is not as strong. And so all the places that I've visited for work are not necessarily places that I would have gone if I had been a tourist.
I see.
So for me, I feel like I've had a very different experience of the world as a result of exploring it through my job instead of exploring it as a tourist.
As a traveler, yeah. That's something. But your father was saying that you can be anywhere in the world when you call and he won't know. And sometimes, what are you in between planes going from Indonesia to Sweden to Germany to Ecuador to Peru to...
Let me answer that question.
Burkina Faso, yes?
Let me answer that question.
Okay.
She calls.
Uh-huh.
And we say hi. And I say, where are you? And she'll say, in an airport. And I will say, what airport? And I can hear the flight announcements being made. And I say, what airport? She says, I'll have to check.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying to myself, what kind of job is this? Where you don't even know what airport you're in.
Now, is this what did you expect Amber Nate to do this when she was in high school and college?
No.
Uh-huh. Right.
What did you expect her to do?
I haven't figured that out yet.
Well, how did you get into being the public health advisor? Right?
By accident. What, like a global thing. Their job.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a global thing. I mean, you're all over the place, really.
Well, it is a global thing. But yeah. The way I started is
and
I started...
some serious stuff, too,
I
right?
started working in sexually transmitted diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked in various places within the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And then, thanks to all of you taxpayers, CDC sent me for a master's degree at the Kennedy School of Government.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that I really had a lot of interaction with people from around the world who were my colleagues and students and friends at the Kennedy School.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gave me a taste for expanding my boundaries beyond the United States. And then someone called up and said, you know, we have a job that you might be interested in, and you would have to travel 40% of the time all over the world.
Wow.
And I said, well, perfect.
What was the first place you visited?
The very first place that I went overseas?
Yes.
My first assignment was 3 months that I spent working in Geneva at the headquarters of the World Health Organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left there and went to a meeting in Togo, which is in West Africa. And that was my first time setting foot in Africa.
So you went from Geneva
mm-hmm.
to Togo.
Yes. And right, then after I left Togo.
Right away? Or
I went
know.
To Ghana to visit a friend of mine from school. So I came full circle to wanting to somehow connect school and friends with work and overseas things.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. If you were to tell us about the work that you do, can you do that or should you do that or what?
Well,
for instance, in the Center for Disease Control.
The Centers for Disease Control.
Wherever there is a disease outbreak in the world, is that what happens with the people at the center?
One of the things that we do at CDC, and let me say, I'm not speaking officially on behalf of CDC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on vacation, but I still do know about it a little bit because I've been there for over 30 years.
Uh-huh.
I was listening to Ty talk about over 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And thinking, wow, that's a really long time. And then I said, wow, I've been at CDC for over 30 years. But
and let me interrupt to say, when she explains this 30-year business,
mm-hmm.
my reaction is, who is this? She hadn't been anywhere for 30 years.
But one of the things that CDC does is at the invitation of states in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
and of countries, if there's an outbreak and they need assistance, then CDC will provide assistance to investigate the outbreak, to try to find out what's happening, to characterize it, possibly to identify resources to address it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, have you done also work through the United Nations?
Yes, we primarily work through the World Health Organization,
mm-hmm.
which is a special agency of the United Nations, which advises ministries of health in developing countries about health issues. And we also work for UNICEF,
mm-hmm.
which used to be the United Nations Children's International Emergency Fund, but now it's just the United Nations Children's Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who provide a lot of the logistics support and a lot of the background know-how in terms of delivering public health in developing countries.
Is that difficult? I mean, does the United States have to seek or seek the permission of countries in order for, you know, people from the CDC to go in to help in particular countries?
Absolutely.
Countries?
Even in the U.S., you have to get the permission of the states to be able to go out. And it's the same when you're working overseas. You have to have agreement from the government in the country that you're working in order to be able to go and work there.
Now, I understand, Anne Renee, that you, with others, were responsible for the eradication of polio throughout the Sudan. Am I correct?
We're working on it. It's not completely gone, but yes, there was a very big we.
Yeah.
And we were involved in the first National Immunization Days for polio in southern Sudan. The 194th country just got its independence a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And so that was back in 1998. And at that time, there weren't really any international health programs that were working in the entire country. There were a lot of small organizations, charitable organizations like CARE, the International Rescue Committee, et cetera, that were working in part. So someone might be working in this part of Sudan and someone else in this part of Sudan. But we decided that it would be possible to do something that covered the entire southern part of Sudan. So that's what we worked on, and that's what we pulled off.
Mm-hmm.
And Kay, given that background, ask her how she ended up in Newark, New Jersey.
Ditto.
Actually, I would say I started out in Newark, New Jersey is probably more accurate. I lived in Newark, New Jersey until I was 9, and then I did a little boomerang and came back to work in the STD clinic, the sexually transmitted disease clinic in Newark for several years before I launched my international career. So it was quite an experience. I learned a lot of things about Newark that I didn't know before working in the STD clinic, and it was quite a learning experience.
You know, I'm going to give out the phone number because I want people to call to talk to you. Because I'm quite sure that there's some people who would just like to know in general, you know, how do you get involved in this kind of work? Because it really is, it's a tremendous burden. At the same time, we're so glad that you're there. At the same time, the government should be glad that CDC is there. The money has to come from what, all over, from different countries or what? Are you able to say or
we're a government agency.
Yeah.
And so our funding primarily comes from Congress.
And you have a huge amount of
and
people.
We hope that's going to continue.
Yeah.
We're a little bit worried right now because things are not looking good for all of the non-defense agencies these days.
I think we're hearing a commercial here, Kay.
Yeah, support.
But the polio eradication effort particularly could not possibly be done by just one government. So there are multiple governments all over the world that have given money in order to achieve polio eradication. And the big funder in polio eradication, when they talk about public-private partnerships, the biggest funder in polio eradication, especially in the first years, was Rotary International. And it's really Rotary and their drive to raise money to eradicate polio in the Americas and then to say that polio could be eradicated from the world. That really pushed all of the other governments, in a sense, to put money up to be able to do this. And Rotary has continued raising from their membership an incredible amount of money.
Isn't
and they've been fantastic. And they also participate in activities all over the world. And one of the things I used to say is for us, you know, when I was somewhere, when somebody from WHO was somewhere, when somebody from UNICEF was somewhere, that's our job. We were all getting salaries. We might be very dedicated to it, but we were there as employees. The Rotary folks are there as volunteers. They didn't have to be there, but they were out there on the front lines as volunteers with everybody else.
Okay, and Renee, we're going to be coming back to you. Kay Thompson here with Gus Henningberg. This is the Kay and Gus Show. I forgot the name of the show for a minute because this is so fascinating.
Well, my name is Gus Henningberg.
Fascinating information coming from your daughter. And we're going to be finding out about, I want to find out about the different countries, what they're like. I want to find out about Darfur. I want to go find out about Rwanda. I want to find out about Somalia, Burkina Faso, and all those countries that I don't know anything about. Never been to Africa, you know, but I'm going to find out through Amina Hindenburg. The number for you to call everyone is 323-679-0906. That number once again is 323-679-0906. We will be right back. Stay with us.
I am no better, neither are you. We are the same, whatever we do. Love me, you hate me, you know me, and then you can figure out the bag I'm in. I have
directly. Yes, we are back. Kate Thompson and Gus Henningberg with Amrinay. And Amrinay Henningberg, and we're continuing our discussion about the Center for Disease Control. If there are people listening, for instance, students thinking of careers, is this an area that you think some people might be interested in? You know, going into, we would call it health issues. The health practices in different countries, help.
Well, I think
what would be the titles that you would talk about?
There are people who go into health care, where what they do is they deliver individual health care,
mm-hmm.
or they focus on individuals. And then there are people who go into public health, who focus more on populations and on the general health, rather than focusing on specific individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a different perspective. But public health schools, there are a number of public health schools all over the U.S. Generally, a master's degree is recommended. it's much easier these days to get into public health if you have a master's degree than it is just with a bachelor's degree. And there are a number of different public health agencies, both public and private, that people can look at. And the Centers for Disease Control happens to be one of them.
Now, is there a lot of people talk about these dangers of the different kind of diseases that are out there. For instance, we always hear about E. coli. And Ebola, and, you know, things like that. How dangerous are these diseases? Are they under control in the United States? Does the United States have things in place, whereas we will not be subjected to them, or what?
There are a lot of diseases that are common overseas that we don't see in the United States anymore. So if I would talk about one that's close to my heart, obviously it's polio. We haven't really had polio in the United States since the 1950s, but polio is still a problem in other parts of the world.
Why is that? Because they don't have the money for the materials for the medicines there, or what?
The way that we got rid of polio was a huge vaccination campaign in which all the kids, perhaps you remember your kids, going to school, getting the sugar cube with the pink drops on it. That was the first polio vaccine. And at that time, polio was a very scary and real thing to everybody. So there was no problem getting people to take the vaccine. They just sent a note home from school and said, we're going to give polio vaccine at school. And people were sending not only their school age kids, but their other kids, hoping they'd get the vaccine also. That's very different from what we have today. But that's really how we've gotten rid of a number of diseases, where countries that couldn't afford the vaccine, didn't have the health infrastructure to deliver the vaccine, have not been able to do so. So they continue now.
Has there been a resistance to, in some parts of the world, that countries don't want the United States to come in to help them?
Of course. One of the reasons that in our particular program, we've chosen to work primarily through the UN is because you don't have that political, some of the political heat that you get if you're working directly as a bilateral United States to the government. There are a number of health programs at CDC that work in a bilateral methodology. So there will be a U.S. government office in the country, and that office is who helps with the health programs.
For instance, when you go into, we do have a caller every name, so we're going to go to this call. But when you go into a country, I want to know exactly what is the kind of thing that you do first. Do you go right to the office that you're assigned, then you go to the outskirts, or what? We want to hear about that. Just give us, in other words, your schedule. In other words, you land in a country, you don't know the language, where do you go? Where do you eat? How do you, you know, that kind of thing, because it's really fascinating. And we do have a caller. The number for you to call is 323-679-0906. You are on the air. Hello. You're on. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi. I have a question for Anne Renee.
Yes.
I would like to know, what is the number one disease threatening young people?
It's different depending on what part of the world you're in, but one of the things. One of the things that certainly is a big threat for young people all over the world is HIV disease and AIDS, because this is something that's particularly found among the young, and is a sexually transmitted disease and also transmitted through drug use, sharing needles, etc. And these are behaviors that you find more commonly among young people than among older people. So that's certainly one of the big risks.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. The number to call is 323-679-0906. Now, you were talking about sexually transmitted diseases and also, you know, drugs. Is there a lot of, of course, there are a lot of drugs all over the world, but is there a country that that you're particularly concerned about, that the United States is particularly concerned about regarding drugs?
This is not my area of expertise.
Okay.
I mean, I think we do have a number of countries that were concerned about drugs from a marketing standpoint, more than we are from the impact of drug use in the countries. But obviously, if you're involved in HIV control, then drug use in other countries is one of the risk factors, and so it's one of the things you have to deal with.
Okay, then let's talk about how, when you go into a country, because I know that you have told me in the past that not only do you do work in the office and whatnot, you're out there in the field. Sometimes you're up in the plains and you're throwing food out or whatever. Tell us about that.
Well, generally, when you go to a country, you have something set up in the capital city. So that's always your first stop.
So you have an office there. That you,
usually yeah. we'll go into either the World Health Organization office or the UNICEF office.
Mm-hmm.
And as in any other situation, when you go into somebody's territory, the first thing you have to do is check in with the head honcho, as
okay.
you say.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go to a WHO office, I usually will meet with the people who are involved in immunization, and they will very early on take me to meet the WHO representative for the country, because you really can't come and step into that person's territory without making sure that they've seen you, that they know who you are, and that they've kind of blessed you being in the country. Before you can even come, WHO or UNICEF has to get the permission from the Ministry of Health for you to be able to come into the country. So at some point, pretty quickly, then you will also go and meet your Ministry of Health counterpart and be introduced to them so that you can then set up how you're going to work in the country.
Are you readily accepted by the different people that you meet in the different countries?
Of course. I'm wonderful and charming and everyone loves me. I think for the most part, I've had a very good reception.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I mean, it's my impression. This is not anything that I've verified through scientific study. But I think seeing Black women overseas
mm-hmm.
as people working for the U.S. government, this is still a pretty unusual thing.
No kidding. Really?
And so I think the reception may be a little bit different or warmer or surprised or whatever. So I think for me, I've always had a very good reception every place that I've worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been quite impressed with the caliber of people I've worked with, and also quite impressed with how caring they are in terms of not only looking out for us professionally, but looking out for us personally.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people don't really understand when they go into countries like Africa, that it's so big, it's so vast. And it's a cradle of civilization. How do you deal with all that? You know, how do you deal with the enormity of Africa? I mean, were you in awe of, you know, being on the African continent at all or what?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, each country is very different.
Mm.
And within the countries, there are an incredible mixture of people. I mean, if you take the African countries and even the Asian countries, there usually are at least 20, 30, 40 different languages that are spoken commonly there.
Mm.
So it's not that they're homogenous. They're very diverse, even within the country. And for me, one of the things that I try and do in every country I'm working in is at least learn how to say good morning and thank you in the local language. And I will make a point to try and go around in the morning and to greet everyone in the office in whatever their local language is.
Mm.
Now, in some places, this just means people laugh a lot because I'm so bad at the pronunciation. But at least they do appreciate the effort to try and come and speak to them, at least to greet them in the language.
So that's one of your ways to use to break the ice, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing that I do always is I always take chocolates. In every office that I go to, I take chocolates.
Right.
And I just, you know, sort of go around at the beginning when I'm first there and offer chocolates to everyone in the office. Candy is a great icebreaker. Even in places where they swear that people don't eat, adults don't eat chocolates. This is what they'll tell me. Adults don't eat sweets. Well, I know everyone says that, but when you get there with chocolates, they do disappear.
Uh-huh.
So that's something I've done.
All right, Amber, we're going to take a break about just about right now. This is really fascinating. Stay with us, everyone. This is Kay Thompson and Gus Henneberg. And this is, what, Gus? What show are we on?
I don't know.
This is the Kay and Gus Show here on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back, everyone, with Amber Henneberg talking about Center of Disease Control and all the this thing is so big and so enormous, you feel like this. You feel like in a movie set, really. Okay? We'll be right back, everyone. Stay with us. Really?
But Dr. King's murder has left me so numb. I don't know where I'm at, really. And of course, you heard this song that was composed by Dean Taylor. especially for today. But I hope that between now and the end of the year, it'll all be together enough that we will have songs that go down in history for these wonderful, brave people who are no longer with us. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Lurleen Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Can't you see it? I know you can feel it. All in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama has got me so upset, and Memphis has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Hound dogs on my trail. Little school children sitting in jail. Black cat crossed my path. I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. Cause I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you, me and my people just about to. I've been there, so I know we keep on saying go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Washing the windows. Picking the cotton. Nothing but rotten. Too damn lazy. Thinking's crazy. Where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know. I don't know. Just try to do my very best. Stand up, be counted with all the rest. Cause everybody knows about Mississippi. Now you heard him. He's one of you. If you have been moved at all, and you know my songs at all, for God's sakes, join me. Don't sit back there. The time is too late now. Good God. You know, the king is dead. The king of love is dead. I ain't about to be nonviolent, honey. Oh. Oh. Whoa, dude. Picket lines, school boycotts. They try to say it's a communist plot. But all I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. And I loved him because he believed it. He lived by it. But you lied to me all the years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady. And you stopped calling my mama Aunt Sadie. Hear me now. But my country is full of lies. We all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust nobody anymore. Keep on saying go slow.
Thompson, Gus Henningberg, Amory Lee Henningberg. Well, Nina Simone, I didn't even know who that was until she said Mississippi, goddamn. Well, there's a lot of things you could also say those words about things that are going on now in different places. Some of the cases that we were talking about, still racism is alive and well, it's not going to be going anyplace anytime soon. We have a couple of our public people, and we're going to be getting back to you, Amory, very shortly. A couple of our people, you know, who are known leaders are having separate arguments with each other about who does what and so forth and so on. And we have seen them on television. And, you know, some of our leaders or those people who perceive of themselves as leaders, you know, into different kind of childish, you know, arguments back and forth. And, you know, kudos goes to Tom Joyner for, you know, radio personality. Who's stepping into the fray saying, act like big boys, guys, or no, well, act like men, guys, and they're going to know who we're talking about. And thanks, Tom, you know, because some of these people need to find out from whence they cometh. We have an African-American president, and it seems that some people are joining some other people in attacking the very first African-American president. Whether you like him or not, you should be behind him because of the fact that this is the time for African-American people. And sometimes when there's in-house bickering and attacking one another, you need to pull yourself back a little bit. Gus, you remember this happened some years ago when David Dinkins was being reelected. And that happened to one of our personalities, you know, was on the bandwagon with this sort of anti-David Dinkins you know, tirade. What did you, do you remember those days?
Yes, and I think it will continue to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When we have people whose talents and training push them into positions where they can impact the world,
mm-hmm.
as are the kinds of things that Anne Renee is talking about,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
there are a whole lot of people who have aspirations to be able to do things like that,
mm-hmm.
but not the training or the opportunity
mm-hmm.
to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They react by attacking those blacks who, in fact, are, for whatever reason, in the position to go impact a health problem in an African country,
mm-hmm.
for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go away. And I hope we don't end up, I don't mean the three of us on this program, but I hope the black community does not get engrossed in reacting to the people who are complaining.
Okay, okay. I'll back off for now, maybe, okay? But they know who they are, and they need to stop the nonsense. Anyway, Ready to Go, and what is this, Ramana?
Ready to Go is a book that was written by a woman who got interested in the public health advisors at CDC as part of her doctoral thesis. And she ended up expanding the history of the public health advisors into a book. And it talks about a lot of the things that public health advisors have done all over the world. On the cover, there's a guy who's actually working in Afghanistan, who recently retired, Steve Schindler.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in there early on and was working to try and bring health services to some of the places that didn't have it. So it's kind of an interesting book if you have more interest in what kinds of things people do around the world. Public health advisors are not so well known, but there are a lot of us in the government.
Yeah, and
out
so
there
important.
And working.
Good Lord.
Well,
yeah,
it's another area
right
as well. And that is, how do you get the training to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she was in college at Tulane University, I went down to visit, really very impressed with which direction she was going. And I remained impressed until I opened the refrigerator in the apartment and there was nothing in it but a head of lettuce.
Cauliflower.
Cauliflower.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying to myself, is this part of the preparation for saving the world?
Okay, and you answered. Okay, we do have a caller. Let's go to the caller first before we get that answer. 323-679-0906. Yes, you're on here. Hello.
Yes, hello. I have a question for Ms. Henningberg.
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes. Is there any thrust or focus on finding indigenous medicines in Africa? You know, I was wondering if the United States, you know, because they go into these different countries and they're always, you know, they're pushing the vaccines and trying to educate people about health, but is there any focus on, you know, highlighting maybe the local medicine practices that people have in the different villages or areas there?
One of the areas that people are really starting to explore in a big way is the interface with traditional healers and with practitioners of traditional medicine. Because in a lot of places in the world, these are the first people who are seen when someone is sick. When you're in a village, you don't go to the health center, which may be 30 or 40 miles away, as your first course. You first would go to the local traditional healer to see if that's the person who can do something to try and help you to get well. And so it is very important, if not for any other reason, but as the eyes and ears of public health, because the traditional healers are the people who often see things first and who will be the first people to become aware of an outbreak of some kind. And trying to marry traditional medicine and Western medicine, if you will, seems to be something that's very successful. One of the big players in public health now is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they've actually brought quite a lot of funding into the public health arena. And one of the videos that they had highlighted on their website had to do with a place in Ethiopia where they set up an HIV clinic near a place that people went to see a particular traditional healer. And they worked with the healer so that they could work together, so that people would go for their traditional medicine, and the traditional healer would encourage them to also take their Western medicine, so that the two of them were working together, mm-hmm. both to try and contribute to the health of
mutual
people.
Mutual respect, in other words.
So I think this is really an area that's growing in terms of, you know, public health and how to do public health more effectively.
Okay, is that the answer to your question? Hello, are you there? Okay. The number to call is 323-679-0906. 323-679-0906. That's really very interesting. So they are showing mutual respect to the old healers. And even though they're still using, you know, the old methods, some of those methods have been tried and true. Have they been, feel as if they've been pushed out or pushed aside, or what's their response to people coming in?
I think traditionally, you know, there's more of an antagonism between the Western medical group and the traditional healers.
Mm.
And in some sense, they've been seen as competing for the same patients.
I see.
And so I think people have realized that that's not so effective. And there's a long way to go. I mean, this is something that's just, to me, really in its infancy, trying to figure out how to marry those two things.
Yeah.
But you, in a lot of places, for instance, when I was in India, they would refer to a lot of the traditional healers as quacks.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
It wasn't even pejorative. It was just the name that they were giving to the people who were practicing these traditional kinds of medicine. But then they started doing special education programs and special programs to bring the network of traditional healers into the people who looked for disease and reported it, or encouraged people to report it.
Okay. We're going to go for another break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us, everyone. Really fascinating stuff. I want to ask you now about individual countries when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Kate Thompson, that's me, and that's you,
and Renee Henningberg, that's me.
And you have been in how many different countries?
Probably about 25 that I've worked in.
I understand that you're the boss in the family when it comes to health and medicine in your family, and your father was telling us something during a break.
Who told you that?
She's the boss.
No, who told you that?
She's the boss.
She did.
Would you like me to name a couple of the doctors?
No.
Oh, okay. So now, what were you going to be telling you about, telling us about Anne Renee when she was when you're in the hospital one day?
Well, I spent some time in hospitals over the past 12 months or so.
Uh-huh.
And different hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, the doctor, the chief surgeon working on me, would come and sit on the bed just to chat. He would check the blood pressure, you know, things that the doctor will do. And invariably the phone rings, and he stops paying attention to me and goes into this long conversation with whoever was called. And after about a week of this one day, I said to him, I'm just curious, who are you talking to about my condition instead of just talking to me? He said, you don't know who's calling you here, boy? I said, no, your daughter. Oh.
So you were, so you every day, you would tell the doctors what to do, or just getting an update, or what?
Just
no matter
sure
what
we were clear.
But no matter what country you were in, so you could be calling from Burkina Faso, from Ecuador, from Sweden, from India, or et cetera, et cetera. Am I right?
So did you?
Because the person she's calling don't have any idea where she. They might be in the lobby, for all she knows, all they know.
But you know one thing. That's a great thing to have a daughter. Or a son who's also in the medical field, you know, when you have something that's wrong when you get a little bit older.
Well, that's the point of view of patients, but I'm not sure the doctors would agree.
No,
with
no, I think she's right. The doctors, some of them get very defensive about that.
I can imagine. But anyway, let me ask you, let's go back to some of these countries. I want to know which countries that you like best, what you think best, what are the unusual characteristics. For instance, you were telling me about rag trade. What is that?
Well, it's quite interesting, particularly in some of the poorer countries. What you'll find is that clothes that have been discarded, for instance, you might take your clothes after you're done with them to Goodwill or someplace.
Yeah.
And some of those clothes are sold in the Goodwill stores, but some of them are not. And they actually end up going overseas, and they end up in these third world countries. So I remember when I was in Uganda, which was one of the first places that I worked, there were some women there who were from the UK, from the United Kingdom, and they had been living there for a while. And they said, oh, the best time to go to the market is on Tuesdays, because on Tuesdays they have a big local marketplace out in a big field. And then they have people who are cooking chickens. And so we go and shop, and then we get chickens. And I said, well, what do you go and shop for? And they said, you can find the best clothes for such little money. Because what happens is all these clothes come from Europe and the clothes come from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
and they're sold there. People in African countries like clothes that are very colorful. So all the clothes that are black, that are the kind of things that we like to wear,
mm-hmm.
solid colors, dark colors, those are the ones that are left on the bottom that nobody wants.
Really?
So if you come along, you can find, you know, an Yves Saint Laurent jacket for $1.50 that nobody in Africa would buy because
mm-hmm.
it's black,
mm-hmm.
and that these women were thrilled when they were filling their whole wardrobe with
oh,
these clothes.
Oh, boy.
But where it really stood out is when I went into South Sudan, and a lot of the people there didn't have clothing to wear, but when they heard the plane coming, and they knew people were coming from outside, they would put on whatever was their best clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that would be just a shirt, or it might be just a skirt, mm-hmm. or it depended on what they have, but whatever they had, they would put it on. And it was kind of eerie to land in a far corner of South Sudan and to see some kid coming up to you with a Michael Jordan shirt, knowing that he has no
wow.
idea who
yeah.
Michael Jordan is.
Yeah.
He can't say Michael Jordan. He doesn't even speak English.
Mm-hmm.
But he's proudly wearing this shirt because he knows mm-hmm. this is something that's good when somebody comes in
yeah.
and they come to see you.
Let me ask you about the materials and the colors. Now, you have brought back some materials and colors from different places that you've gone. And the colors are so vivid. For instance, the stole that, you know, the shawl, that was just some
Kashmina.
Vivid, you know, the Kashmina shawl. The colors were so vivid, red, and some of the other colors just absolutely. How is that done? Where do these colors come from? Is it inks? Are they dyes? What?
Usually dyes.
And they're made out of what? Are they plants, berries?
Generally
what?
Made from plants.
Really?
Yeah. It depends on where you are. Sometimes they're made from other animal products, but mostly made from plants.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the striking things when you travel from Africa to Europe or travel from Africa to the U.S. You really realize that we're very monochrome in the way we dress.
Yeah.
And that we tend to go for dark colors and just very quietly dress. And then you go into Africa and it's just vivid. I mean, I remember one day I was in Senegal and it was a Friday afternoon and I made the mistake of going to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge line. I ended up being there for about 2 hours. But it was fascinating because all of the women and the men were wearing these incredible clothes because on Friday they go to the mosque and so everyone dresses up. And so people would be standing in line for the bank in these incredible clothes and all these beautiful colors. Grand boo-boos, and it was just beautiful.
When you say boo-boo, what is the boo-boo?
That's a type of outfit, kind of a very loose pant
mm-hmm.
with a very big sort of jumper, if
mm-hmm.
you will, that's worn by men,
uh-huh.
and a hat to go with it,
mm-hmm.
and they would just be fascinating.
Wow. Now, are these made in the villages themselves, or there are people who can make them? I mean, you wouldn't see a tailor shop, but what would you see? People actually doing something by hand?
Well, in
or?
The cities, I mean, you do find tailors.
Yeah.
You can go to places and buy the fabric, and then you can bring it to a tailor and tell the tailor what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually when I'm in some place for a longer period of time, for instance, when I was in India, I think India, the women have one of the most practical and elegant type of outfits, and it's called a salwar kameez. And
what this is
the loose pants that fit underneath the tunic.
Mm-hmm.
And this salwar kameez can make women who are short, fat, tall, everything, just look so elegant because it's a long, flowing piece of material.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, and what people will do is they may have a very vivid pattern for the pants and then a solid top. And then there's a scarf that goes over it.
Ah.
And it just, it's their everyday kind of dress. But to us, it looks so elegant.
Elegant,
and so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Seen some of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and then, I mean, this is not the fancy. The one that you see more often with India is you see the sari,
yes.
which is the dress that people wrap
yeah.
up in. But
yeah.
that's more for dressing up.
Mm-hmm.
But this salwar kameez you see in Pakistan, in India.
And they're very easy to put on.
Very
then, right?
easy
yeah,
to put on, very loose, very comfortable to wear. Just a very practical kind of outfit
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
you wear.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You know, very nice outfit. So I would have lots of those things.
Yeah, I'm curious about the colors, the dyes. You said coming from, you know, maybe animal products or the trees or bushes
the plants,
or whatever.
The roots,
the plants.
Different things.
Is that something? Yeah. Wow, this is absolutely fascinating. Then they bring it to market. You know, and is there always a marketplace in a lot of the African countries or no?
I mean, there definitely are marketplaces in some places, like in the, my husband is from Burkina Faso, and in his village, there aren't really many commercial establishments, but there's a traveling market that goes to the different villages. And so maybe every 2 weeks, the market will come to his village. And so you find those traveling markets. And then in any of the big cities, you'll find just large outdoor markets.
If you were to choose your favorite 5 countries, number one, what would be top?
I would never be able to do that. Because for me, what I have found is that in each country, there are things that make each country unique.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that I really like about each country. And there, of course, are always something that, you know, okay, well, maybe I would change this if I was able to. But for me, every country has had its charm. And I've really enjoyed my time in all the different countries that I've worked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some you have more of an attachment to. Like, I'll always feel attached to Uganda because that was the first country that I worked in extensively. So it's always going to hold a special place in my heart.
Uganda.
Yes.
The Pearl
of Africa.
Edia means country.
It was.
Yeah.
It's not anymore.
Yeah.
It's also a lot of other people's country.
Yeah. I've heard that's an exquisite place, you know.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, where I stayed was on Lake Victoria, and it's just a beautiful country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Kay, ask her about her experience working in Newark, New Jersey.
I'm not getting into politics. We're going to be taking a break along about now. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Kay Thompson, Gus Henningberg, and we're taking a closer look at different issues. Right now, we're taking a closer look at what Gus's daughter, Anne Renee Henningberg, does. She's an advisor. Give me the title again.
Public health
advisor for the Center for Disease Control. We'll be right back, everyone. Stay with us.
You carry yourself, but if you let me, here's what I'll do. I'll take care of you. I love the Lord the same as you. So you see, I know just what you've been through. But if you let me, here's what I'll do. Oh, I just got to take care of you. You won't ever have to worry. You won't ever have to cry. So I'll be there beside you to dry your weeping eyes. So darling, tell me that you'll be true. But there is no doubt in my mind, I know what I want to do. And just as sure as one is two, well, you know I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you.
All righty. And we are back, Kay Thompson, here with Gus Henningberg. And we're taking a close look at a lot of different issues. We're taking a close look at Gus's daughter, Anne Renee Henningberg, and finding out about the Center for Disease Control. Really fascinating stuff. You have taken us on quite a journey tonight. Really, really interesting. There's still so many things to talk about. One thing I did want to ask you was about, when you pack, when they say for you to, have you ever been in a situation where they say you've got to go here, you've got to go there? How do you go about packing, or is there a certain outfit or a certain outfit that you know that you have to take along that can be worn in any place, in other words? How do you do that?
Well, I have actually a a travel wardrobe, which is very different from what I wear when I'm in the U.S. In some places, for instance, when you're in Europe, the way that you dress is pretty similar. But for me, I have sort of a number of pants that I wear with tunic-y kinds of tops. Because in a lot of places, women still are not wearing pants all the time. And so you want to have something that's a little dressier, that looks more like a dress, but you still want to be comfortable. And so my solution has been just to put pants or leggings under a dress. And that's worked very well most of the places that I've been. The first time that I went on assignment, when I went to Geneva, what we talked about before, my very first assignment, my supervisor told me, oh, at WHO, everyone dresses up. And so I went out and spent like 3 days buying dresses because I didn't have any dresses at all. I bought all these dresses and skirts and things. And then I got to Geneva and everybody was wearing pants and shirts. And I was so mad at him. But I have one purple dress that has kind of an African pattern around the collar that I got in one of the first times when I went to the Republic of Congo, to Brazzaville. And that was probably in 1995 or 96. And I still wear that when I go overseas. And so there are these pictures like through the years of me sitting in meetings, because, and you go to a meeting overseas, it's quite fascinating. If you go into a meeting and you meet from say 9 to 10, you go out for a break, and 5 minutes into the break, people will show up with pictures of everyone sitting in the meeting that you can buy. And this is places where there may not be electricity, where you don't know how they did this and how they did it so quickly. But people are standing outside with pictures of everyone in the meeting, and they're trying to sell you those pictures. So I have a few of those pictures through the generation where I look like I'm getting older, but the purple dress is still looking great.
Well, tell us about Egypt.
Okay.
You know, Egypt is in the news now. A lot of people want to know about Egypt. This is the oldest civilization.
Egypt was very interesting. The WHO regional office is located in Egypt, and I've actually had the opportunity to go there twice. At first, it was located in Alexandria, which is one of the oldest cities, but a very different city than Cairo, which is where the office has moved to now. And the first time I went to Egypt, I went to Egypt for work, and I met with some people there, and I was there for about a week. And then I left and I went from there to Israel. And for me, the thing that was the most striking is that being an outsider and not knowing, not understanding the language or anything, the people look the same. The languages sounded the same. I knew that these people were really unhappy with each other. But to me, it just struck me as this had to be kind of a squabble between cousins or brothers, because the similarities were so much more striking than the differences. And, It was quite striking in the difference in the two countries.
Did, when you went to some of these places and you had read about them, like the Nile, you know, like the old Mecca, what's a Mecca, you know? I mean, I know it's a place that you pray. Am I right or not?
Yes.
You know, yeah.
That's in Saudi Arabia. I haven't been there yet.
Oh, okay. But anyway, are there certain places that you feel a certain reverence?
Well, I have to put in a plug for the Nile.
For the Nile.
Because people associate the Nile with Egypt. But the headwaters of the Nile and the source of the Nile is actually in Uganda. And so one of the first places that they took me, we went out for a weekend, and they sort of took me on a tour around, and they said, okay, you have to go stand on the equator, and then you have to go to where the Nile begins. And everyone thinks the Nile begins in Egypt, but no, that's not right. The Nile begins here in Uganda.
In Uganda.
So it's quite interesting.
Is this an age-old argument or what? Among
there probably, what? There's a source of the Blue Nile, a source of the White Nile. A lot of the Nile goes through Sudan, Egypt. I mean, so everyone likes to claim it. It's a big river.
What about the pyramids? What about
the pyramids were fascinating. I mean, you know, sometimes you just, there's certain things that even though you feel like they're really geeky and touristy, you have to do them. And you can't go to Cairo and not see the pyramids.
Yeah.
So some of my friends actually who worked in Egypt took me for a weekend in Cairo, and they had a connection, someone who was a manager of a hotel that was right in the grounds of the pyramids. So we went and stayed in this nice hotel, and you could wake up in the morning and look out and see the pyramid. And then we went, and of course we went to the Sphinx. And this guy, you know, 7-year-old son and I both made the Sphinx pose in front of the Sphinx, and he took our picture. And they made me get on a camel and I had to ride around on the camel. So some of these things you're just required to do.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's quite interesting for me traveling, I'm not a shopper. I don't like to go spend my time in markets and buying things and everything. But it's almost as a foreigner coming in with money, you're supposed to go buy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So people are always trying to direct you to go buy stuff and where you can find things and what the local crafts are. And so you get some really interesting experiences that way.
Mm-hmm.
I would say shopping is quite different.
I want to see if we can talk to Dr. Ben. I hope he's still okay. I'm putting out a call for Dr. Yosef Ben Yekinen, the African-American scholar, who was going on trips back and forth to Egypt, you know, to introduce people to, you know, where man and the history of African-Americans, you know, began. So, you know, we just wanted to throw that in. But, you know, nothing.
Well, I feel like I did a little bit to do my part, because one of the things that I've done is I've really encouraged people. You know, everyone's so anxious to go to Europe
mm-hmm.
and see Europe and go to Paris and do these things. He said the world is bigger than Europe. And in Africa, people really appreciate and need those dollars that tourists can bring.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my trips, when I was in Sudan, I actually went and I was supposed to stay for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up staying there for 9.5 months.
Mm.
And somewhere toward the end of the stay, Daddy showed up with Kiata, mm-hmm. his granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And we went and toured around Kenya. And it was, well, you can ask him what it was like and how it met his expectations or didn't.
Well, it was interesting to watch her in this process.
Yemene?
No. The grandchild, who we went at her suggestion. It was like her mouth was open all the time. Like,
mm-hmm.
What are they still talking about? What are they doing? It wasn't that she was surprised. She was just amazed because she didn't know what
mm-hmm.
to look for,
mm-hmm.
what she would be seeing in these different countries. And she and I started traveling together, I guess, when she was 5 years old or 6 years
mm-hmm.
old. Not from here to Washington or from here to Los Angeles, but from here to Europe, Africa.
But how did you react to the pyramids? Were you in Egypt?
Oh, he was in Kenya.
He was in Kenya. Okay.
Yes.
How did you react to some of these old, you know, statues or old replicas or whatever? What is the name of the place where the slaves departed from? I forget.
Well, that's not so much Kenya.
All right.
You know,
where
you
is
have
it then?
Gori Island, which
Gori
is in
Island.
West Africa, which is Senegal.
Mm.
And a lot of the slaves that came to the U.S. went this way.
Mm.
But only about 10% of the African slaves ended up in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest ended up all over the world. And so if you go to East Africa, to Tanzania, Daddy and Kiata actually came to Tanzania
uh-huh.
also.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to a place called Bagamoyo.
Mm-hmm.
And Bagamoyo means the place of the broken heart. And you can see where the door of no return was.
That's what it
where
was.
The slaves went out. And this is where they went
now,
through
where
this place
is that?
And onto the
boat. Door of no return is where?
They're in different places where slaves were sold and
uh-huh.
the departure point. There's one in Gori Island in Senegal.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one in Bagamoyo in Tanzania. Mm-hmm. And there are other ones in different parts of the continent.
I see. Wow. And so many people have said that they have had very, very powerful experiences, you know, when they went to these places. Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your experience?
Even though you had read a piece of paper that says this is what you're going to see,
mm-hmm.
even with that pre-education, if you will, it was still an impact
mm-hmm.
That you couldn't anticipate.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the impact? Was it something that you felt? That
well, no.
The power of it, significance of it, or what?
You don't even try to analyze it. You just absorb it. But you don't try to sit down, certainly with a five-year-old child following
mm-hmm.
along with you. You don't try to analyze it. You just see it and absorb it
mm-hmm.
and maybe later in your life, you may say, wow, I didn't fully appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any particular feeling when you first went to, say, Gori Island or any of the areas where there was a
all
door
over,
of no return?
All over Africa, you have. For me, I had this feeling. It was like the first time I landed in Lomé, Togo.
Uh-huh.
It was like, wow, I'm in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And you know, when I landed in the base camp where most of the activities for South Sudan were handled at that time, is called Lokochokio. It's in northern Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember people telling me, and it was very striking. This one guy who was the radio operator who was sort of located in a place where he would see everybody coming in. And he says, I remember when I first saw you and I thought this Ethiopian woman was coming to work with us. And I wondered who she was.
Uh-huh.
And then I heard someone say, Alpha Romeo Hotel, come in, because that was my radio name.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke and he said, I don't think she's from Ethiopia. But in the different places, I mean, when I was in Uganda, people said, oh, you must be from the western part of Uganda. And when I was in Kenya, people said, oh, you must be from Somalia or Ethiopia.
Now
in Sudan, people said, you must be from Sudan.
Was it because of the way that you carried yourself, the way that you looked? You looked like the people in a certain area of that different place where you were?
I think the Ethiopian, Eritrean, that look is sort of the look that I have. But in other places, I think people just try to place you.
Yeah.
And where they try to place you is not in the United States.
Ah,
when they see a black person, they don't think United States.
Because that's
not where they see people. So people always come to me and they say, are you from Jamaica? Are you from? But they don't say, are you from the U.S.? And then they say, oh, are your parents the Sudanese in the airport? They kept me for a long time because they were inspecting my bag.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, you must be from Sudan. And I said, I've never been here except for work. Well, your father must be from Sudan. And I said, no, really, he's not. He's from Alabama. And, well, what about your grandfather? He's from Alabama, too. And, you know, we sort of went through a few generations, and they couldn't believe I wasn't from Sudan.
Yeah.
And they actually made me a very gracious offer. They said, listen, we know you must be from Sudan. Let's passport and give you a Sudanese passport, and you can just stay here. And I said, no, thank you. That's okay. But I will enjoy my visit while I'm here.
Really interesting. Anne Renee Henningberg, thank you very much. This has been quite a good conversation, not an interview, conversation.
Let me make one other quick comment before you close.
Yeah, about 1 minute. Uh-huh.
Having an adult black male traveling with a 4-year-old female causes almost as much in your or in the minds of people, like there's something wrong with this.
Where is the mother?
Where is the mother?
Yeah. Okay.
And as we would go through, and I'll just share this one very quickly. The first trip we went on, I think I took the trip to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So she and I, she was about 3 or 4. We're going through Newark Airport. We're going all the way up to sit close to the gate where you go through to get on the plane.
Uh-huh.
And it was clear that she was curious. And finally, she asked the question about, why are these people staring at us, man?
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't thought about it. I had noticed it, but it was seeing a black adult male traveling with a black female child. It was a question of curiosity for the pilots, for the crew on the airplane, for the other passengers.
Thank you.
It's the K and Duff Show, giving you a closer look with K Compton and Gus Ginningberg back together again. Mm-hmm.